Side 4, Man and His Symbols by Carl G. Jung. Continuing with Ancient Myths and Modern Man on page 110. Heroes and Hero Makers. The myth of the hero is the most common and the best-known myth in the world. We find it in the classical mythology of Greece and Rome, in the Middle Ages, in the Far East, and among contemporary primitive tribes. It also appears in our dreams. It has an obvious dramatic appeal and a less obvious but nonetheless profound psychological importance. These hero myths vary enormously in detail, but the more closely one examines them, the more one sees that structurally they are very similar. They have, that is to say, a universal pattern, even though they were developed by groups or individuals without any direct cultural contact with each other, by, for instance, tribes of Africans or North American Indians, or the Greeks or the Incas of Peru. Over and over again, one hears a tale describing a hero's miraculous but humble birth, his early proof of superhuman strength, his rapid rise to prominence or power, his triumphant struggle with the forces of evil, his fallibility to the sin of pride, hubris, and his fall through betrayal or a heroic sacrifice that ends in his death. I shall later explain in more detail why I believe that this pattern has psychological meaning both for the individual, who is endeavoring to discover and assert his personality, and for a whole society, which has an equal need to establish its collective identity. But another important characteristic of the hero myth provides a clue. In many of these stories, the early weakness of the hero is balanced by the appearance of strong tutelary figures or guardians who enable him to perform the superhuman tasks that he cannot accomplish unaided. Among the Greek heroes, Theseus had Poseidon, god of the sea, as his deity. Perseus had Athena. Achilles had Chiron, the wise centaur, as his tutor. These godlike figures are, in fact, symbolic representatives of the whole psyche, the larger and more comprehensive identity that supplies the strength that the personal ego lacks. Their special role suggests that the essential function of the heroic myth is the development of the individual's ego consciousness, his awareness of his own strengths and weaknesses, in a manner that will equip him for the arduous tasks with which life confronts him. Once the individual has passed his initial test and can enter the mature phase of life, the hero myth loses its relevance. The hero's symbolic death becomes, as it were, the achievement of that maturity. I have so far been referring to the complete hero myth, in which the whole cycle from birth to death is elaborately described. But it is essential to recognize that at each of the stages in this cycle, there are special forms of the hero story that apply to the particular point reached by the individual in the development of his ego consciousness and to the specific problem confronting him at a given moment. That is to say, the image of the hero evolves in a manner that reflects each stage of the evolution of the human personality. This concept can be more easily understood if I present it in what amounts to a diagram. I take this example from the obscure North American tribe of Winnebago Indians, because it sets out quite clearly four distinct stages in the evolution of the hero. In these stories, which Dr. Paul Radin published in 1948 under the title Hero Cycles of the Winnebago, we can see the definite progression from the most primitive to the most sophisticated concept of the hero. This progression is characteristic of other hero cycles. Though the symbolic figures in them naturally have different names, their roles are similar, and we shall understand them better once we have grasped the point made by this example. Dr. Radin noted four distinct cycles in the evolution of the hero myth. He named them the trickster cycle, the hare cycle, the red horn cycle, and the twin cycle. He correctly perceived the psychology of this evolution when he said, "It represents our efforts to deal with the problem of growing up, aided by the illusion of an eternal fiction." The trickster cycle corresponds to the earliest and least developed period of life. Trickster is a figure whose physical appetites dominate his behavior. He has the mentality of an infant. Lacking any purpose beyond the gratification of his primary needs, he is cruel, cynical, and unfeeling. Our stories of Br'er Rabbit or Reynard the Fox preserve the essentials of the trickster myth. This figure, which at the outset assumes the form of an animal, passes from one mischievous exploit to another. But as he does so, a change comes over him. At the end of his rogue's progress, he is beginning to take on the physical likeness of a grown man. The next figure is Hare. He also, like Trickster, whose animal traits are represented among some American Indians by a coyote, first appears in animal form. He has not yet attained mature human stature, but all the same he appears as the founder of human culture, the Transformer. The Winnebago believe that in giving them their famous medicine rite, he became their savior as well as their culture hero. This myth was so powerful, Dr. Radin tells us, that the members of the peyote rite were reluctant to give up Hare when Christianity began to penetrate the tribe. He became merged with the figure of Christ, and some of them argued that they had no need of Christ since they already had Hare. This archetypal figure represents a distinct advance on Trickster. One can see that he is becoming a socialized being, correcting the instinctual and infantile urges found in the Trickster cycle. Note, concerning Hare, Dr. Radin remarks, Hare is the typical hero as we know him from all over the world, civilized and pre-literate, and from the most remote periods of world history. End of note. Red Horn, the third of this series of hero figures, is an ambiguous person, said to be the youngest of 10 brothers. He meets the requirements of an archetypal hero by passing such tests as winning a race and by proving himself in battle. His superhuman power is shown by his ability to defeat giants by guile in a game of dice, or by strength in a wrestling match. He has a powerful companion in the form of a thunderbird called Storms as he walks, whose strength compensates for whatever weakness Redhorn may display. With Redhorn, we have reached the world of man, though an archaic world in which the aid of superhuman powers or tutelary gods is needed to ensure man's victory over the evil forces that beset him. Toward the end of the story, the hero god departs, leaving Redhorn and his sons on Earth. The danger to man's happiness and security now comes from man himself. This basic theme, which is repeated in the last cycle, that of the twins, raises, in effect, the vital question, how long can human beings be successful without falling victims to their own pride, or, in mythological terms, to the jealousy of the gods? Though the twins are said to be the sons of the sun, they are essentially human, and together constitute a single person. Originally united in the mother's womb, they were forced apart at birth, yet they belong together, and it is necessary, though exceedingly difficult, to reunite them. In these two children, we see the two sides of man's nature. One of them, flesh, is acquiescent, mild, and without initiative. The other, stump, is dynamic and rebellious. In some of the stories of the twin heroes, these attitudes are refined to the point where one figure represents the introvert, whose main strength lies in his powers of reflection, and the other is an extrovert, a man of action who can accomplish great deeds. For a long time, these two heroes are invincible. Whether they are presented as two separate figures or as two in one, they carry all before them. Yet, like the warrior gods of Navajo Indian mythology, they eventually sicken from the abuse of their own power. There are no monsters left in heaven or on earth for them to overcome, and their consequent wild behavior brings retribution in its train. The Winnebago say that nothing in the end was safe from them, not even the supports on which the world rests. When the twins killed one of the four animals that upheld the earth, they had overstepped all limits, and the time had come to put a stop to their career. The punishment they deserved was death. Thus, in both the Red Horn cycle and that of the twins, we see the theme of sacrifice or death of the hero as a necessary cure for hubris, the pride that has overreached itself. In the primitive societies whose levels of culture correspond to the Red Horn cycle, it appears that this danger may have been forestalled by the institution of propitiatory human sacrifice, a theme that has immense symbolic importance and recurs continually in human history. The Winnebago, like the Iroquois and a few Algonquin tribes, probably ate human flesh as a totemic ritual that could tame their individualistic and destructive impulses. In the examples of the hero's betrayal or defeat that occur in European mythology, the theme of ritual sacrifice is more specifically employed as a punishment for hubris. But the Winnebago, like the Navajo, do not go so far. Though the twins erred, and though the punishment should have been death, they themselves became so frightened by their irresponsible power that they consented to live in a state of permanent rest. The conflicting sides of human nature were again in equilibrium. I have given this description of the four types of hero at some length because it provides a clear demonstration of the pattern that occurs both in the historic myths and in the hero dreams of contemporary man. With this in mind, we can examine the following dream of a middle-aged patient. The interpretation of this dream shows how the analytical psychologist can, from his knowledge of mythology, help his patient find an answer to what might otherwise seem an insoluble riddle. This man dreamed he was at a theater in the role of an important spectator whose opinion is respected. There was an act in which a white monkey was standing on a pedestal with men around him. In recounting his dream, the man said, "My guide explains the theme to me. It is the ordeal of a young sailor who is exposed both to the wind and to being beaten up. I begin to object that this white monkey is not a sailor at all. But just at that moment, a young man in black stands up, and I think that he must be the true hero. But another handsome young man strides toward an altar and stretches himself out on it. They are making marks on his bare chest as a preparation to offering him as a human sacrifice. Then I find myself on a platform with several other people. We could get down by a small ladder, but I hesitate to do so because there are two young toughs standing by, and I think that they will stop us. But when a woman in the group uses the ladder unmolested, I see that it is safe, and all of us follow the woman down." Now, a dream of this kind cannot be quickly or simply interpreted. We have to unravel it carefully in order to show both its relation to the dreamer's own life and its wider symbolic implications. The patient who produced it was a man who had achieved maturity in a physical sense. He was successful in his career, and he had apparently done pretty well as a husband and father. Yet psychologically he was still immature and had not completed his youthful phase of development. It was this psychic immaturity that expressed itself in his dreams as different aspects of the hero myth. These images still exerted a strong attraction for his imagination, even though they had long since exhausted any of their meaning in terms of the reality of his everyday life. Thus, in a dream, we see a series of figures theatrically presented as various aspects of a figure that the dreamer keeps expecting will turn out to be the true hero. The first is a white monkey, the second a sailor, the third a young man in black, and the last a handsome young man. In the early part of the performance, which is supposed to represent the sailor's ordeal, the dreamer sees only the white monkey. The man in black suddenly appears and as suddenly disappears. He is a new figure who first contrasts with the white monkey and is then for a moment confused with the hero proper. Such confusion in dreams is not unusual. The dreamer is not usually presented with clear images by the unconscious. He has to puzzle out a meaning from a succession of contrasts and paradoxes. Significantly, these figures appear in the course of a theatrical performance. And this context seems to be a direct reference by the dreamer to his own treatment by analysis. The guide he mentions is presumably his analyst, yet he does not see himself as a patient who is being treated by a doctor, but as an important spectator whose opinion is respected. This is the vantage point from which he sees certain figures whom he associates with the experience of growing up. The white monkey, for instance, reminds him of the playful and somewhat lawless behavior of boys between the ages of 7 and 12. The sailor suggests the adventurousness of early adolescence, together with the consequent punishment by beating for irresponsible pranks. The dreamer could offer no association to the young man in black, but in the handsome young man about to be sacrificed, he saw a reminder of the self-sacrificing idealism of late adolescence. At this stage, it is possible to put together the historical material or archetypal hero images and the data from the dreamer's personal experience in order to see how they corroborate, contradict, or qualify each other. The first conclusion is that the white monkey seems to represent trickster, or at least those traits of personality that the Winnebago attribute to trickster. But to me, the monkey also stands for something that the dreamer has not personally and adequately experienced for himself. He in fact says that in the dream he was a spectator. I found out that as a boy he had been excessively attached to his parents and that he was naturally introspective. For these reasons, he had never fully developed the boisterous qualities natural to late childhood, nor had he joined in the games of his schoolfellows. He had not, as the saying goes, got up to monkey tricks or practiced monkey shines. The saying provides the clue here. The monkey in the dream is in fact a symbolic form of the trickster figure. But why should trickster appear as a monkey, and why should it be white? As I have already pointed out, the Winnebago myth tells us that toward the end of the cycle, trickster begins to emerge in the physical likeness of a man. And here in the dream is a monkey, so close to a human being that it is a laughable and not too dangerous caricature of a man. The dreamer himself could offer no personal association that could explain why the monkey was white. But from our knowledge of primitive symbolism, we can conjecture that whiteness lends a special quality of godlikeness to this otherwise banal figure. The albino is regarded as sacred in many primitive communities. This fits in quite well with trickster's semi-divine or semi-magical powers. Thus, it seems, the white monkey symbolizes for the dreamer the positive quality of childhood playfulness, which he had insufficiently accepted at the time, and which he now feels called upon to exalt. As the dream tells us, he places it on a pedestal, where it becomes something more than a lost childhood experience. It is, for the adult man, a symbol of creative experimentalism. Next, we come to the conclusion about the monkey. Is it a monkey, or is it a sailor who has to put up with beatings? The dreamer's own associations pointed to the meaning of this transformation. But in any case, the next stage in human development is one in which the irresponsibility of childhood gives way to a period of socialization, and that involves submission to painful discipline. One could say, therefore, that the sailor is an advanced form of trickster who is being changed into a socially responsible person by means of an initiation ordeal. Drawing on the history of symbolism, we can assume that the wind represents the natural elements in this process, and the beatings are those that are humanly induced. At this point, then, we have a reference to the process that the Winnebago describe in the hair cycle, where the culture hero is a weak yet struggling figure, ready to sacrifice childishness for the sake of further development.